Hey everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast. Thank you for checking out another episode of the show. Today's feature is returning guest and my buddy, Stryker Spurlock. Stryker returns to the show to talk about his brand new film he's been working on called Part-Time. And you have a really fun opportunity to come see the film with him and a bunch of our friends on June 10th here in St. Louis. And he's going to talk all about that. So do want to remind you, as always, Rock Paper Podcast is brought to you by Roughneck Beard Company and American Rambler. Located right here in St. Louis over in the Maplewood area off Manchester. Swing by the shop and pick up some of your favorite all-natural, locally sourced beard oils, beard balms. It's warming up. You might want to check out their junk powder. It's a all-natural alternative to products like Gold Bond or whatever you might use. Or one of my personal favorites, their Roughneck Beard Batter. Roughneck Beard Batter is the ultimate beard and skin moisturizer. It's a blend of 8 nutrient-rich soft oils whipped directly into unrefined shea butter for a moisturizing kick like no other. The highest amount of triglycerides and fatty acids available on the beard care market, hands down. World-renowned, but made right here in St. Louis. Again, you can stop by the shop or you can shop 24/7 at roughneckbeardcompany.com. Use my code RPP15 for an exclusive 15% off your entire purchase. Again, that's RPP15 at checkout. And even if you don't have a beard, check out the line of products from American Rambler. All kinds of wonderful grooming products. All kinds of wonderful stuff over there. Great smelling products. Even combs. I mean, whatever you need, they've got you taken care of. So check it all out. And big thank you to Heil Sound and their continued support in helping make this show sound great. Shop HeilSound.com today and get yourself a new microphone. And if you'd like to continue to support this show, a great way to do so would be visiting the all-new merch store at buyjack.com/rockpaperpodcast and grab a new t-shirt, a tank top. They got some trucker hats, snapbacks up there, so any of that is greatly appreciated and helps keep this show going. So thank you to everybody that's already purchased their shirts and hats. It really means a whole lot to me. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And if you need me, of course, you can find me at rockpaperpodcast.com. Hit me up on the email, rockpaperpodcast@gmail. Any of the socials, whatever it is, I would love to hear from you all. And with that out of the way, sit back, relax, and enjoy this brand new episode with filmmaker Stryker Spurlock.
Podcast is kind of like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
Hi, I'm Stryker Spurlock, and you are listening to Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
This is beat paper. Paper covers rock. Rock beats is the Shane covers nonstop. Never know what new kind of guests that he's got coming at you. Live and direct on the spot. Could be rock, folk, country, or hip-hop, jazz. All kind of folks that he has. Could be an artist or a comedian to make you laugh on the
Rock Paper Podcast.
Double-decker fudge round rolling round town. Shane coming at you live and direct from ground zero. He's your hero. He's your bestie. Rock Paper Podcast with Shane Presley.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Hey everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from St. Louis, Missouri, hanging out today with returning guest Stryker Spurlock.
Hello.
Welcome back, man.
It's good to be back.
Only took us like six-something years.
Yeah, 6 years, yeah. I thought it was even farther back. I was like, wasn't it like 2013? And like the podcast was even around then.
Right.
So.
Yeah, it's crazy to think that we've been doing this long, though. Like, we just hit 7 years in May. So, yeah, that's wild for me to think about it still doing this thing.
Very cool. Congratulations.
Thanks, man. Yeah. Over 900 episodes of this silly show. But last time you did it, it was me and Chris were still together doing the show co-hosting. And Chris parted ways after about a year of doing the show. And
yeah.
Got busy. And so now it's just the two of us this time around. But
We I'm glad it's worked out today. We're getting to hang and talk and catch up. And you've been busy working on a new film, which I think was super cool that you're doing this. And that because actually I told you before we clicked record, I went back and I listened to that first appearance of the show, and we talked about that you have a love of filmmaking, mm-hmm. and that you I think we mainly focused on comedy, that you were working on a lot of stand-up at the time, but we also talked about like that you got into, you know, at a young age, like just taking on like a camera around filming, and like you making shorts for your comedy showcase, mm-hmm. and all, and like you said, uncle was into film, and that kind of at our young age.
He made a movie in the 90s that only I have it.
Yeah.
I have the only copy somewhere. It's like a it's a VHS transfer of like the 16mm film print. I don't know whatever happened to the original film reel, but I have the VHS copy.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist anywhere on the internet. You can't get it anywhere.
All right. And you I think you said in that movie like you were in your mother's stomach
My mom is a pregnant woman, right, who walks to the background,
all right,
and I'm the pregnant bump. So that was my first role.
So it's just cool that this has sort of been there for a long time, you know.
It's
been something that you've been working at even before you knew it, and you're finally you're making your own feature film, mm-hmm. and that's called Part Time, mm-hmm. available. We'll have a screening coming up here soon.
Yeah, June 10th. It's a Thursday.
So, I thought this would be fun to talk all about the film, talk about the process and everything. I know this is kind of a long time in the making. We just had the first screening, and that went well.
Yeah,
that
was
sold out.
That was Saturday night. That was sold out. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
for sure.
And so that's over at
Arcadian Cinema.
Yeah,
yeah, it's an outdoor backlot movie theater, mm-hmm. Behind the Heavy Anchor. You got to go into the Heavy Anchor and just go all the way out the back, and then go around the corner, and that's the Arcadian. They're gonna move inside eventually, but for right now they're outside, and it's really cool. It's a really cool spot.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, stretch out, grab a lawn chair, and just mm-hmm. kind of hang out in there and enjoy the nice night. And you said so we sold out the first one, but we have tickets remaining for our second screening coming up on June 10th, and we'd like to you to grab those tickets and join us that evening over there.
Yeah, I think it is like a weird movie, and there's like a lot of obstacles to people liking it. Like there's a lot of things that are like built in to kind of put people off. But I think really, based on the reaction Saturday night, I think it is kind of a crowd pleaser in its own way. Like people thought it was very funny. Mm-hmm. So if you come to the movie, you might not like all of it, but you will at least think some of it is funny.
Yeah.
I can guarantee that.
Yeah. You sent me a little advanced screening of it to kind of talk about it. And one of my favorite things that I told you is seeing all my buddies in it. Like, mm-hmm. there's several friends of the show that make appearances in the film, which is typically the case for a young filmmaker with no budget to, you know, hey, I need my friends to play these roles and stuff. So
everything was written for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every role, almost every role was written for a specific person.
Right.
For sure. Yeah.
But that's, I was just cool to see them all out there and on the screen now and stuff. So
no, I agree. I love it.
Yeah. So a great cast of a lot of St. Louis comedians and mm-hmm. stuff. You're going to see a lot of familiar faces throughout the film. I think this is probably some of my favorite characters in it were Christian and Meredith as their characters in the film, which you know, I don't want to spoil anything, but those two really kind of stepped up to the plate.
Oh, they killed it.
Yeah. So it was a lot of fun to see them, especially kind of like a stretch, you know, like they're some of the sweetest people in real life, and then like just to see them playing these characters and stuff, and
these monsters,
right? Yeah. those were the two you cast as that's the one you like. You're like, those two would be perfect for this role.
Mm-hmm. That part of the movie was like a late addition to the script too, because I was like, something supernatural has to happen in this movie, and what the supernatural thing was changed as I was writing it. It was originally going to be Casey finds out that he can levitate, And then it was going to be, he finds out he can teleport, but only like a mile away. And then I was like, what if something else happens? And then I wrote these characters that come in. And I was like, it's got to be Christian and Meredith.
All right.
There was nobody else who could do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Should we talk about what the movie's about?
Yeah, let's go back a little bit in the beginning to where we can, let's properly talk about this. So where does this even start? Like, where, I know, like I said, you've been working at film for a while, but like, where does the idea, like, I need to do a feature film, I wanted black and white, you know, where's all this kind of get going?
Well, so originally it was going to be a short. Like, I didn't know it was going to be a full-length movie at the time. So in, like, late 2016, I met Casey Paulson. You know Casey, right?
I don't believe so.
He started doing stand-up around that time. Right. He's really funny. He's, like, a one-liner guy. I met him. He was, like, 19. He's very, like, very squeaky clean-looking young boy.
Yeah.
And I met him, and just there's something about him that was very charismatic to me, but, like, in a very understated way. Like, he didn't really say much, and he was kind of, like, shy, but he just had a presence to him. And so for some reason, I just had this image in my head of him just like wearing a big puffy coat in the snow in black and white. And that was the starting image. And I was trying to think of like a short film I could do. And I told this image to my girlfriend and main collaborator, Amy Milton. Do you know Amy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know Amy a little bit.
I told it to Amy, and Amy was like, it feels kind of like a sci-fi image almost. Like, it feels kind of eerie. And I was like, yeah, it does. So that's when I kind of got the ball rolling on a short where I was like, okay, it'll be a short film about Casey, and something creepy happens to him, something supernatural. And it was going to be like 10 to 15 pages long. But then over like a whole, I got to say like 2 years, I worked on the script. Like, it went through like 500 different versions or whatever, and eventually it was just... it had to be a full-length movie. I kept adding more ideas. I kept refining what I had and seeing like kind of what was in the mix that I could bring out more. And the end result was only 48 pages long, but you still get like an hour 40 movie out of it just because of how long everything takes. You know, a sentence on a page can be like 5 minutes in the movie. So mm-hmm. That was the writing process.
Yeah. And this is like you and Amy wrote the script together?
No, I just bounced ideas off her. She was really an invaluable collaborator, but she didn't write it. She was just kind of a notes giver.
Okay.
And she was like the assistant director while we were filming, and mm-hmm. she did like all the sound. So she was a big part of it, but this is very much my baby.
Right. Yeah, man. And then so it's like we get the script all finished up, and what do you get a couple cameras in and mm-hmm. and then hit out like where's and you did you have to like scout out locations for this, or did you like kind of just use what you had available there?
Well, that's my real house. Yeah. I don't live there anymore, but that's my mom's house. That's like the main house in the movie. And then all of like the places where people are just walking or hanging out are just places I knew. Like, mm-hmm. you know, there's Creve-Coeur Lake in there at some point. There's like the McKelvey dog park by the water park, things like that. Cause I would just, when I was writing the script, I would just walk around at night in that neighborhood, listening to music and thinking. And so those places very much became a part of the kind of mental landscape of writing the script. Like, I would write with a place in mind. Some of the like big, streets he like walks alongside are like outside of my old office, like places like that. It's all places I knew. There's like barely any scouting,
really. Right.
Yeah.
Well, and so Casey's the main character, mm-hmm. right? That's yeah. Like I recognize a lot of the faces, but I don't think I've ever met him at all. So
he's very secretive.
Yeah,
he's very withdrawn, as you can see in the movie. All right. You know? Yeah. The movie's like him turned up like 90%, you know, like or turned down rather. But he's kind of quiet in real life.
Yeah,
yeah.
And so I don't know. It's cool too to hear like it started with just that idea, and then like that turned into this whole film. And you knew like even just that image that you made in your mind that this is the guy that you wanted to star in the mm-hmm. in the film and made it all happen.
And I knew then it was gonna be black and white too. Like, that was the original idea. And Amy was like, well, try out both and see if you like it in color. And then I did, and I was like, doesn't look as good.
Right.
There's some shots that look nice in color, but most of them I think look better in black and white. So whatever it is, somehow that is the spiritually correct choice, mm-hmm. I think, just from the beginning.
Yeah. Obviously, probably mainly because it's black and white, but just kind of like, I go back to like thinking about like a Clerks kind of thing, like, yeah. You know, like Kevin Smith starting on a black and white film like mm-hmm. that. Mainly I think out of his was like got more out of necessity for budget and
cheaper
stuff.
Film stock.
Yeah.
So but with digital, it's more just a choice, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
But I just think, I remember like, you know, it's just kind of the, you know, not that who knows what will happen with your careers compared to Kevin Smith's, but you know, just like, it's cool to see like, that's where he started to was just like, you know, having a bunch of his friends,
yeah,
black and white film, you know, kind of thing, and of course he's going on to do really well for himself now. Mm-hmm. So, but I don't know. It was it was interesting too. Like I said, there's not a lot of black and white, so like I feel like when you have that kind of story like that, you really have to dive into the, you know, actual story, the dialogue, and everything else. Like it's you're not. It takes away from all the scenic kind of stuff. I mean, yeah, there is still some scenic shots that you can pull off, but
it's
like,
yeah, it's taking something away.
Right.
For sure.
But you dive more into getting focused into the story and stuff.
Yeah. What little story there is. Right. Yeah. It's very, very light on story.
Right. There's like a scene, beginning, like where they're like working like this book place,
yeah
like a packaging or boxing up books and stuff. Is like any of that stuff like, where do you pull all this, like is that from any kind of true life stuff that you were going through? Or
so that's kind of a combination. That's not really my experiences necessarily. So basically I had to think of what his job would be, and at first when I was trying to figure out the tone of the movie, it was going to be something more blatantly absurd or like a joke where like they're just stacking wooden blocks or they're like putting dead leaves into a bag,
right?
Things like that, just something that just didn't make any sense on purpose. But then I was like, no. So Amy told me that when she at some point worked for like some kind of place that where they would get big boxes of old books like donated, and she had to go through them and see which ones could be resold, like which ones were in good shape. So that is kind of like what his job is. But anything beyond that, we don't really know. Like it looks like a company has just set up in like some random warehouse.
Right.
It doesn't look like it looks like a front almost. So that's the idea, is they're going through these donated books. At some point, I don't know if you got to that scene in the movie, but at some point, Alan Williams, his character finds like $60 hidden in a book.
Yeah,
and that's because that's something that would happen, was people would hide money in their books and then forget about it and donate them, and then Amy would find it and be like, "It's mine now."
So, yeah,
so we incorporate some stuff from that.
I was just watching The Neighborhood. Mm-hmm. It's CBS with Cedric the Entertainer, and there was like that actually showed up in there too, where I don't know, something like they had some kind of Bible or whatever. It was this, and then like they open up the Bible and there's like $600 in the Bible.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
people do that.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, jackpot! I'm gonna buy a new TV. And and she's like, no, you need to give that back to the church, otherwise you're gonna, you know, be paying for it and stuff or something like that. But
I think the book that Alan finds the money in is The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah,
which feels nice with, you know, what happens in the rest of the movie.
Right.
It's kind of a nice little wink, I think.
I liked him, Alan, in there too, because like he, I don't know, I felt like he's, it's like very some of the jokes that he starts doing like are very like really what it reminded me of was Norm Macdonald doing a Dave Letterman impression mm-hmm. on SNL. Like there was like you know, just the whole where, I don't know if you know that Norm's yeah. but where he's doing that, like got any gum?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like
yeah.
that whole like.
Yeah, that's just how Alan sounds.
Yeah. just like, but that's where my mind went. Like, it just made me laugh even harder.
Some of those jokes that Alan's doing are just him riffing.
Right.
Like the one where he's like, "Hey Justin, do you want this book about Mormon teens, like parenting your Mormon teen?" Yeah. That was written. I wrote that, and then like all the other jokes were just him and Justin just going off.
Right. And that's some of the that's like the best stuff. Like when you can just let these guys do what they do in mm-hmm. that in a situation and stuff. Like,
yeah, I would say probably about 25-30% of the movie is improvised.
Yeah,
I definitely gave people some room to just kind of go off.
Right. Yeah, that's the. I feel like there's, I don't know how many like different takes you did, but I feel like that's I've heard like from other filmmakers, like, you know, you have your take where it's the actual script, mm-hmm. you know, the dialogue, and then you're like, all right, let's the next one, let's just do what you do, and so, you know, kind of thing, and like, and you, that way you can. And usually, like they say, like they would always end up taking the one that was improvised because it was way funnier than what was written on anyway. Yeah, so
for sure, there's one take. I don't know. Did you get to the part where he goes to visit his friend who's really obnoxious? You'd know it. It takes like 20 minutes.
Yeah, maybe not then.
Okay, so he goes to visit his friend, and there's like a 5-minute shot of just them sitting at a table eating Chinese food.
Yeah,
and it is.
Oh yeah, I'm not. Yeah, okay.
You're talking about right. Yeah. So at a certain point. So
there's only one soda, right?
Yeah, there's only one soda. Yeah, and it's his. Right. It's not yours. It's his. So they're for like the first couple minutes, they're doing the script, and then at a certain point, I just didn't say cut, and so then they just start talking, and I think that's a nice blend. So in the same take, it's the script and improv. And,
yeah,
and there's a lot more to that that got cut out. Because they went for like a long time until Tommy was like, I have to pee. I have to get up and pee. So I cut out like maybe like 4 minutes.
Yeah.
But they go for quite a while in that.
Yeah.
Which is exciting. And what I like, so the movie has all these like really long shots, right? Mm-hmm. And I think using comedians was great for that. Because, you know, comedians are on a stage and they have to remember all this stuff that they have to do in real time. So I think they're kind of really well suited to just be like, it's a 5-minute shot and we have to do all this in one take,
yeah.
You know, they can just hold it in their brains.
Yeah. It kind of reminded me, like in that sense, like of a Broadway play type of thing, you know, like where it is like these sets. So, you know, long scenes in one particular setting. I don't know. Is that what, did you ever get involved in any like theater in school like that at all?
I didn't do like theater like that, but we did. Did you ever come to see Fatal Bus Accident?
No, I never made any of those shows.
Okay, so that's like, it's like kind of a sketch show, but it's not really even sketches. It's more like a TV show,
right.
You know, where there's like a recurring, it's the same characters every time, but the characters are the hosts of a talk show, and the talk show never gets around to happening because just things keep going wrong, right? That was the idea. So it is like a stage show, but it's not like a sketch show.
Yeah.
So they're kind of basically plays, mm-hmm. you know, they're like 45 minute to an hour plays. And we wrote like probably like 20 of those or more. And I wrote them like while I was writing, or I co-wrote them because I wrote them with Jeremy and John and Amy. We wrote those while I was writing the script. So I got a lot of practice with like similar but different forms of writing. Because, you know, with the when you're on stage, it's different than if you have the option to cut. You know what I mean? Like, things have to proceed in, like, a different manner. So that was my theatrical experience, was writing Fatal Bus Accident
right.
with everybody.
Yeah. I didn't do a lot of anything on stage, but I did do, like, stagehand work, just helping out, because I enjoyed our theater teacher, and she was just cool lady, so I enjoyed hanging out with her. So you know, so it was like I enjoyed being in that atmosphere, but I just never had a knack to perform or anything. It wasn't something I really had interest in.
Yeah.
But I think I would maybe behind the scenes, more like writing and stuff, I think I could handle doing more of that kind of stuff. But I never got into it as far as yet. So
right, yeah. Well, maybe one day.
Yeah. Yeah. But movies have always been a big part of my life. I consider myself.
I'm looking at your DVD shelf over there. Yeah, that's quite a lot.
Yeah, and that, I mean, like, I don't know. And like, I've quit buying them. I used to, you know, used to be a thing, and then now everything's just, you know, on demand and everything right. now. But I quite the movie buff though. I would buy a lot of films just but I don't know. It's just like something I enjoy. The storytelling, same thing with music for me too. I enjoy mm-hmm. artists that songwriters that tell stories in their music and stuff. So I think it would be fun to something to pursue and try my hand at someday and stuff. But yeah, so I think it's cool. That's why I really admire what you're doing, like in actually doing it.
You know? Oh, thank you. Yeah.
So what do you think like was the biggest thing you learned? Like what was like especially. Was this all filmed prior to COVID stuff, or did you have to work through it?
This was filmed in 2019.
Yeah.
So basically, I finished writing the script on like December, I think 2nd, 2018. And I was like, oh, well, the script's finally done. Oh, and this is supposed to be like a winter movie. Oh, we got to go do this right now. So in those like 3 weeks of December, like around Christmas and stuff, I'm just messaging people on Facebook saying, hey, can you make a movie with me in January and February? And kind of coordinating like a schedule. And then I work for like a wedding video company as an editor. And we have all these like cameras that our filmers use. So I went to my boss and I was like, hey, can I borrow a camera for like 7 straight weekends? And he's like, yeah, don't break it. Go ahead. Sure.
Don't break it.
Yeah. Like, so that's how I got the camera. And so December, we only had like 3 weeks of, you know, quote unquote pre-production. It was very, very fast. And then the actual like main part of the shooting was just January and February 2019. And it was just like 13-hour days. My feet just getting destroyed from standing around all the time doing. There was one day where we did like, I think like almost every scene in the house we did in one day of like with all the stuff with like the parents, and it was just grueling. So there wasn't like a room for a whole lot of takes, even though I would try to be like, all right, let's do it again. Let's do it again. Let's do it again. And then we'd have to pick up and move on, 'cause the sun was going down or whatever, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. That was also a great piece of casting too. Was having Yale in there as the father.
He's so funny.
Yeah, he's just like a great like sitcom dad. Like he's just like such a good job at that, as that character and stuff. Like,
yeah. What I love about Yale's performance, if I can, I know no one who's listening to this has probably seen the movie yet. Please come see the movie. What I love about Yale's performance is it seems like he's being friendly, but he also hates you.
Yeah.
You know, like whenever, like there's some moments in the background when he's like responding to what other people are saying, where you can see him like roll his eyes. Like he's being catty behind their back, but it's not drawn attention to, you know, he's just doing that. And I didn't really even tell him to do that. He's just kind of using his own instincts,
yeah.
Which I like.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. So what was like, what do you think the biggest hurdle you felt like, what was something you learned along the way of doing all this, like dealing with, and that, you know, obviously you said you got it all filmed before, you know, everything kind of shut down, but so I guess that kind of helped having time to edit and stuff afterwards. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, the editing took like maybe 6 months. That was a long time. Yeah. The biggest hurdle, I don't know, the biggest hurdle was probably building the sets mm-hmm. for the parts where we needed sets. That was, we didn't really know what we were doing, and Amy was kind of spearheading that. And so at some point it was just like us and like 6 of our friends in my mom's backyard on like a Sunday afternoon, just hammering at these like big black walls with stuff, glued to them or whatever. And you know, it's like, they're not turning out like how we want, but then they all worked out in the end. Fortunately we got to the location where we were shooting all that stuff with like the big crazy sets, and we were looking in like a back room, and we found out that they had like these big collapsible black backgrounds for like the like stage plays, and we're like, we're just gonna use these too. So we got, it was almost like divine intervention, like yeah. here's some more walls for your movie at the last minute.
Nice.
So that was definitely the biggest hurdle, but biggest thing that I learned, I think I would have more shooting days, period. I would do a little bit more spread out and do less per day, so we have time to just really kind of sink our teeth into whatever we're doing. So we're not doing like 16 scenes in one day or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So that, is this like, did it kind of morph the idea morph throughout the, like when you get to filming, and like you're saying, there was some improvising and things, but like as far as like, or did you guys pretty much stick to the gist of the idea that you had, you know, when you're writing it? Like, it did the film turn out pretty much exactly how you planned it, like, or did it make some turns throughout the film where you're like started like, all right, and this is even better than what I wrote?
I would say it's pretty close to the script. Like the parts that are written are pretty much in the movie. But I'd say where it changed was having the improv come in. Mm-hmm. And then there's some other stuff that was just like later ideas that I had. Like, so basically we filmed most of the movie in January and February. And then as I was editing it, I got to like a rough cut that was like an hour 25. And something about the back half felt kind of thin, like not enough happened. So I had to think of some other things that could happen. And then we went back and filmed those. I don't think you've got to the scene yet, but there's a point where Casey goes to the convenience store to buy chips. And that was filmed in like August 2019, but he's wearing a coat and a hat. Like it's supposed to be like cold out, you know? So we would do things like that. And, did you get to the point where people talk about their dreams, like in the voiceover over like the old footage?
I don't think so. That doesn't sound familiar either.
Okay, once you get to that, that was a later edition. That was like July. I was like, everyone come back to my house and I'm going to ask you some questions and you're just going to go off and then I'll do something with that. So that's what we did. So the parts in the movie where people are, where you just hear people's voices over unrelated footage, that was added later.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it brings something nice to the movie.
Yeah, man. I don't know. Like, it's kind of more. Maybe just I feel like that way because of like being black and white. But it seems like it's more kind of like, I don't know, like psychological kind of thing. Like it's more. It's not like. I wouldn't say it's like any like straightforward comedy or any, you know, I don't know how you would like really define it.
Yeah.
But there's definitely like a lot more. Thinking, I think, going into it, like there's a lot more, just like you relate to this character, Casey, who is kind of struggling, you know, to find his way, kind of thing.
He doesn't say much,
right?
You don't really know what he's thinking, yeah,
right. So, like, I don't know, I feel like, but it's interesting, like, and I think just like I said, with black and white, just feel like maybe it's kind of makes you feel like that way more. I go back to like. Again, like a Twilight Zone and all this stuff, like these different black and white things that have obviously been a part of my life. But that's so maybe that's why I feel like that way. But there's definitely still comedy in it. Like you're saying, like the crowds are laughing and stuff. So that's got to feel good when people are getting the jokes and and things that you're seeing the crowd respond where they're intended and stuff. So, I don't know. It's a lot of fun, man. It was cool. Like I said, it was really a nice treat to see this all come together and seeing all my friends in there and stuff. And so, again, tickets available today. You said there's a website they can purchase links and.
Yeah, if you look for the Arkadin Cinema, ARKADIN, if you go to their website, you can buy tickets for the June 10th showing. It's outdoors. You might want to bring your own chair. They supply chairs, but they go kind of fast. And we'll do a Q&A afterwards. So if you want to ask me anything. Mm-hmm. Oh, and I'll have merch. Please buy merch. Buy some posters. buy some buttons.
Yeah. Yeah, man. That's so what's like the goal after this initial screening? Like you said, hopefully maybe there'll be more. Is that, do you like, look to submit it to like film festival stuff or what's the next goal for what do you intend to do with this?
I submitted it to a lot of film festivals over the last year and none of that really went anywhere because it's very, very competitive. And also it's hard when something's like kind of more quote unquote difficult, it is a little bit harder for it to get into places like that. So I think with this specific movie, I think we'll probably try to show it at least one more time in town, probably toward the end of this year. I don't want to say too much about that yet, but we'll try to do that. And then it might show online for like a week or two for free, maybe. I don't know. And then at some point there'll be a DVD. And then that's kind of it for that movie. And then we'll just keep making more movies and just see where that goes.
Yeah. This is definitely something you want to continue. You already started on another script or anything, or you?
Oh yeah, yeah, we're working on a couple.
Yeah.
Well, Amy and I are doing one together that we've been working on for a long time. We're kind of writing it with Ella Fritz, if you know Ella.
Yeah.
Ella's going to star in it, and then me and Amy are going to direct it together, and that's going to be. I think that's supposed to be the next one that is going to come out. And then I'm working on like two Amy's working on a couple more. Yeah, we're just going to make movies together and see where it goes.
There you go.
Yeah.
Is it you think you'll still stick with the black and white? Or do you...
Not for any of the ones that are coming up, I don't think. Maybe like little snippets. Mm-hmm. Maybe like there might be like some things that are in black and white for whatever reason. But I think that all the upcoming movies will look pretty different from this one.
Sure.
I think this one I was kind of working through... kind of teaching myself how to put together a movie. And this is kind of what I conceived that to be, like the most basic kind of movie that I could have made. And so that's what this was. And then now I've kind of moved beyond that, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that could be cool, man. Like just to get, can you, like I said, just keep pursuing that and, seeing where this thing can take you.
Yeah.
Especially having friends that are also into it, keeping you motivated and supportive and
for
stuff.
Sure. Like, yeah. I want to just keep working with the St. Louis comedians, mm-hmm. basically. Like, mm-hmm. and once again, all the scripts that are being written, they're being written for specific people in St. Louis comedy.
Right.
So.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's good. So we got, all local, all film locally and everything, and hopefully we'll get some people coming out to the show, the screening, and that supports local business, supports, more revenue coming back right into town and everything. So
yeah, Derek Cotton's great. I love that place.
Yep.
They got good popcorn. They got popcorn, like weird flavors. If you like that, they got candy. It's a good spot.
Yeah. Very cool. Yeah. I haven't made it. I haven't actually done the theater part, but I've definitely spent a lot of time at Heavy Anchor. And
Heavy Anchor's also great.
That's one of my favorite spots in town. It's
so nice that they're right next to each other.
Yeah.
Or, they will be next to each other when our cabin moves inside. It's going to be the building right next door.
Yeah.
But
that's cool that they're doing these little back lot kind of screenings and stuff out there. And I've done, I saw Christian snapped a picture of his face on the wall and everything there and stuff, and like, so that's gotta feel cool to see it all come together on the wall and the screening and stuff.
And Casey's never seen the movie.
Yeah.
He won't watch it. So we had like a private cast and crew screening in like January 2020. We did a little private screening, and I was like, where's Casey? And I texted him and he's like, yeah, I'm delivering pizzas for emos right now. I'm like, what, you didn't take off work for this? Like, what? And then Saturday, the premiere, he showed up, and then he left before the movie started. And I was asking people later, I was like, where did Casey go? And they were like, I think he went to just go drive around. Like, he doesn't want to watch himself for an hour and 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Which I understand, but maybe one day when he's like 80, I'll hold him down and make him watch
it. There's a lot of those guys, though. Like, I mean, not even... whatever, all the big ones, like they all talk about, they don't watch their own. I mean, that's what they say in interviews, at least. They don't watch their movies and stuff. And I'm like,
it's real. Yeah. It's a real phenomenon.
Yeah. Well, so I don't know. I told you, I went back and listened to your episode, first appearance on the show. And like that, again, that was 6 years ago. So it was a little difficult for me to actually listen to myself, because I feel like I've gotten much better since that day.
Oh, for sure. I didn't want to listen to it just because I was, a different person.
Yeah.
I was like, what, 18 at the time? Yeah, I don't want to hear that.
But so that's the only thing that's really hard for me to like, I enjoy listening to my current work.
Yeah.
Like I don't mind listening to the show. It's kind of nice because I'll film or I'll record it and I'm, engaged in the conversation, and then it's like it's nice to be able to listen to the playback and just listen as a fan,
Yeah, for sure. I love watching my own movie.
Right.
I get a great amount of pleasure out of it.
Yeah.
Some people think that's weird. Some people are like, oh, I would hate watching my own movie, but no, I think it's hilarious.
Right.
I cackle at certain things even still. Like I was laughing the other night really hard. It was just a good feeling.
Yeah.
It's something to be proud of,
Sure, definitely.
For sure.
Did you guys do like a red carpet kind of thing at all or anything like that?
No. I wore a little suit jacket, which I'm glad that it cooled down so I could wear it and not be just miserable and sweating. I wore a little suit jacket and I kind of stood by the back at the merch and talked to people as they came in. And then I sat in the front row and just kind of zonked out and like watched it. And then I stood up and we did a Q&A.
Yeah.
I literally just like stood out of my chair and just like kind of sat back against the screen and the Q&A just started.
Yeah.
I didn't have to walk up or anything.
What kind of, what was your favorite question you think you during the Q&A? Do you get some good ones?
I did, yeah. No, people seemed to like it. They had a lot of really nice questions. I think it's not really a question, but I think my... Oh, it is a question. What am I talking about? This is literally a question. my friend Chris Ward, he asked me, what's with all the tiger stuff in the movie? Because there's like a lot of like little things about tigers. And it meant so much to me that he noticed that. Because I put that in there, and I've been hoping someone would notice. And then finally someone did.
Yeah.
And so I was like, yes.
I did. I noticed it, too.
Oh, good.
The tiger. Thank and you. Especially because like, I merely thought... the you know pandemic phenomenon of Tiger King, but this was all filmed pre Tiger King and stuff. So like, so I thought it was funny though. I did notice a lot of tiger talk there. So what inspired the tiger talk then?
The tiger is kind of just once again, no one's seen the movie yet. Maybe this will make sense. Come listen to the podcast after you see the movie, and it's like the commentary. The tiger to me. Is kind of just like there's a lot in the movie about people talking about other places in the world, you know, whether that's like going to Colorado or like something like the Bermuda Triangle. There's kind of they're kind of ate up with what else is out there mm-hmm. in their own little ways. And so the tiger is just kind of a little signification of just foreign places or, you know, quote unquote, the exotic that they are kind of fantasizing about. This fantasy of the other place.
Right.
That's what the tiger is. To me, someone else might think it means something else.
Sure.
But that's kind of why I put it in there.
I think that's like just about every, you know, I mean, there's people definitely comfortable with just here in the Midwest and where, you know, but I think there's many of us that fantasize about like, especially at probably Casey's age, like in that, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of, as you're dealing with a lot of things of like coming into adulthood and learning who you are, you think that wherever your home is like the worst place and that everything is going to be so much better, you know, whatever else. And I don't know. Like I thought that for a time, like I thought, you know, St. Louis was this boring place and stuff. And then like I really started getting into and more involved in what was going on in our arts and everything else. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, man, St. Louis is great. We have a lot of wonderful things here.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, it'd be cool to be like coastal on a beach somewhere, but there's a lot of great things here happening in St. Louis and in my hometown. So, so I guess that I feel like that's something a lot of people can relate to, though. That
for sure, and you know, the movie can feel so like negative and hateful, but I don't want people to think that that's how I personally feel necessarily. Like it's all about like feeling both. Mm-hmm. Like it's kind of the struggle. Between the two feelings, but I definitely think, as you know, grim and dreary a lot of the landscape in the movie is, I feel like it's also very beautiful. Like I love looking at it. I love looking at the highway in Maryland Heights mm-hmm. and the Creve-Coeur Lake and all that, even though it kind of looks gross.
Yeah,
like, I think it's nice. So, and I hope people can feel that when they watch the movie.
Yeah, man. Well, getting snacks and tickets. Come on out to. The theater there and see this show and hopefully we'll get like I said more stuff coming up for the fall and maybe another opportunity and things. And like I said, that's what's, you know, it's cool to think about. I mean, the possibilities are really kind of endless for something like it. You never really know what could pick up, and especially cool with like you got so many different platforms now. Like maybe it gets picked up and put on Netflix or Prime or mm-hmm. whatever, or you know, something. So,
but I'm not worrying about it though. Yeah. That's the thing, is I can't worry about what happens to it. I'm just glad that it got made, and I'm glad people are liking it.
Right.
People are, and what's nice is it gives you so little, like 10 different people can have 10 different interpretations mm-hmm. on what Casey is thinking, just because he never says anything.
Sure.
So people can really bring themselves into the movie, I think.
I mean, that's good art, man. Like that's what it's all about. Like something, I don't know. I enjoy, like a lot of times I'll ask, like, again, a lot of this show is music based. So I talk to a lot of songwriters, and a lot of times I'll ask them like a story behind some of the songs, but a lot of times I'm not really necessarily looking for you to tell me exactly what it means, because some of that stuff's fun to put your own twist on it and stuff, like I say, your own scenario, what you think's going on and stuff. So
that's why when I talk about movie, I try to always say, well, I think.
Right.
So it's not like the official answer. It's just what was going through my head when I put it in there, mm-hmm. you know. But there's a lot in the movie that is just abstract, that is just for you to kind of do something with yourself. It doesn't really, quote unquote, mean anything.
Right.
But it's not just junk. Like, I had a reason for doing it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, man, I'm proud of you. I'm excited to see what's next for you.
Thank you, man.
Especially, you know, moving into some of these other, you know, next projects and stuff, mm-hmm. you know, see what else we can come up with. And,
for sure.
But so I've been going around asking some of these questions, and I thought I might like to see what your take on some of these are.
For sure.
So, speaking of movies and stuff, if you were to cast a Stryker Spurlock biopic, mm-hmm. who would you like to see play you in the movie version?
Ooh, let me think. What age? Like, what age are we talking?
I don't know. It's your story, your movie. Wow. We can, whatever you think.
I'd like to do a Don't Look Back. Not Don't Look Back. I'm Not There. I'd like to do an I'm Not There, the Bob Dylan movie where it's like 9 different people playing Bob Dylan. I would do that.
Yeah?
Yeah. Just like, you know, women and men, just a lot. They're all just Bob Dylan. But right. That's what I would do. And then you can cast a lot of people.
Yeah.
I'd cast my dad. My dad would be old me. You know? Yeah.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, this one kind of came up a while back. I was listening to Stern's show, and Dave Grohl was on, and he talked about hanging out at Paul McCartney's house mm-hmm. for dinner and stuff. And I was just like, man, that's got to be a pretty cool night to spend the evening just hanging out with him. But what would be a dream dinner for you? Who is like maybe like 3 or 4 people you'd like to invite over for the evening and hang out? Past or present, I guess.
I don't know. It's hard because I never really think, like, I like a lot of directors or whoever, or writers or what have you. I like a lot of artists, but there's no one who I'm like, oh, I gotta ask them this question. Like, I don't really, I don't know what I would say to them. I'd be like, do you like soda? Like, yeah. You know, like, I don't know. Where do you get your pants? But I do, I think just generally, I think I wish that I could have experienced the filmmaking scene in France in the 70s. Mm-hmm. I think that would have been cool to know all those people.
Yeah.
So that's not really dinner. That's more just hanging out. But I think that's probably the closest thing I wish I could have been a part of.
Right. Yeah. So you don't, there's not really any certain writer or director or anybody that you like admire their work and that you'd.
There's lots of people I admire, but I'm like, I just don't know what I'd say to them. Sure. I think I probably just wouldn't like them if I met them. Yeah. You know, like there's so many people where I'm like, I don't know. I'd probably look like a moron.
There's a lot of truth to that for sure. Like there's, I've been fortunate enough to meet some of the people that I really like, and sometimes it's not the best experience, not what you wanted. I mean, but again, and I always take a step back and look at it like, well, we all are human. Who knows what was going on with them that day? Right. They could have just been having a bad day. Some people are just assholes. That's also could be true also, but, mm-hmm. You know, but sometimes most of the people I've met though are really great, and it's always a cool experience to like just you know, shake their hand and say, hey, thanks for your work and stuff. So
for sure. I would say this, the person I think I've hit it off with the most who I've met is Neil Hamburger. If you know him.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was really cool. We just talked about movies. We didn't talk about comedy.
Right.
And that was probably why he liked talking to me, was because we were talking about comedy.
Yeah. I'd try to do that a lot too with like, on the show when I have the opportunity. I try to talk, like I had I got to sit with Brad Williams mm-hmm. when he was at Helium.
Oh, nice.
Not the last time, but the year before. And again, he's a guy, he's been doing it for a long time. I'm sure everybody's talked to him about the same basic stuff in comedy.
For sure.
But we, since he's in St. Louis, I was like, we talked St. Louis barbecue. He talked about going to the City Museum and playing in like the ball pit and all the stuff like that. Like, so
yeah, you gotta customize it.
Yeah, yeah. I felt like I got some different stuff in an interview than a lot of people would, because nobody else can ask about St. Louis.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, so I definitely have to like try to throw some different stuff in there because I'll talk a lot about pizza and stuff too, just because like I'm a fan, but
yeah. I see people think about pizza.
Yeah. So, especially our pizza, St. Louis, you know, what we're known
so
for.
So divisive.
Yeah, definitely yeah. been, everybody has some very strong opinions on
it. I like it. I like emo. I like Dogtown pizza. I like all that stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I like it all. Like I like emos. I like Chicago deep dish. I like.
Yeah. Detroit. Yeah. It's all good.
I'll eat it all.
New York.
I can't go wrong with some pizza wherever it's at. So, all right. What about, if we had a Stryker Spurlock action figure, what do you think maybe like three of your accessories might be that came?
Oh man. I think I would have a little drawstring that would just say various horrible things that I say to my girlfriend. I can't say them here, but I'll just walk into the room and just say some complete nonsense, whatever I've thought of. And she's like, cool, thanks. I can't think of any examples. They're just complete non sequiturs, but I would have a little drawstring that did that. All right. I think.
I have a Arlie Ermey action figure from
Full Metal Jacket,
and then I bought it off his website, and it's and it had like a regular version, and then like the extra salty version.
Oh, good!
And it's like all the movie quotes and stuff, like, and it's pretty hilarious, and it's signed by him also. So,
oh wow, did he die recently?
No, I think he's still going. I think so. Maybe. I don't know.
We'll look it up.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the, man, that's a bad game to play. Like, are they still, you know?
Yeah.
No. Especially with 2020, man, I felt we lost like so many people. Like,
yeah.
And sometimes it's hard to, kind of forget because there were so many that got like lost, we lost, that it got like people get, you know, overlooked sometimes and stuff because like some other celebrity died the next day that, you know, never.
Yeah. There was like a couple like old filmmakers who like died of COVID, you know,
but yeah, sad stuff, man, for sure. All right. What about, is there a movie or a TV show you wish you were in? Like, is there a certain world that you see Stryker Spurlock would like to be a part of?
Like the fictional universe or like me acting in a movie?
Yeah, like, you know, whatever, you know, these certain towns or even, yeah, if they're, whatever it is, the story that is created or the town that or place that is featured in the film or TV show. And stuff.
I'm gonna go way back to a thing I liked as a kid and say I would like to live in the world of Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah, all right, you know, Toontown.
I would move it to Toontown. Yeah. Be a pest and chase cartoon characters around.
Yeah,
harass them. Just let me touch your what are rabbit ears called? It's just called ears.
Yeah,
I'm just trying to grab his ears.
Yeah. It was actually a great meme that popped up the other day with Tom Brady, and he's wearing like a hat and glasses, and he looks like, you know, like, why does Tom Brady look like he's going to Toontown to kill Roger Rabbit and stuff? Like,
yeah.
And I was like, man, that's a good pull right there. It's a good reference. But yeah, that would be different for sure.
Mm-hmm. Because I loved cartoons as a kid. I wanted to live in Ed, Edd n Eddy. That was my favorite show, things like that. So as a kid, I was like, oh, man, it'd be cool if all the cartoons were real. So yeah. I loved Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Sure, it was kind of a nice mashup of the two. So
I was like, why isn't Ed, Edd n Eddy in Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Like, I had no conception of, like, time passing and, like, different things existing in different years, you know?
Yeah. You ever... Do you think you'd ever do that, like work in animation or do...
Oh, I don't know. I can't draw or anything.
Yeah?
I would do a voice in something, sure, yeah, if someone wanted me to, if I liked it.
Yeah?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, I think that'd be... obviously, we can find animators and stuff, but I think it'd be fun to work in that in that form of media also.
My friend Millie is an animator. I like what she does. She mostly just does drawings, though. I don't think she really does videos anymore.
But yeah, that'd be. I always find that voiceover work fascinating too. Like some of those people, you know, obviously all the Simpsons voices and SpongeBob, or you know, just whatever. All like, I mean, a lot of those people have done several voices over the years too.
Yeah.
And like, so I think about that a lot. I'm like, that's just a fun thing. I mean, like, I just think it'd be cool to be a part of that world.
Have you ever heard about the guy who plays Plankton on SpongeBob? Mr. Lawrence is what he's called.
I don't think I...
He goes by Mr. Lawrence. Okay. And apparently he like either does or used to do stand up. Mm-hmm. And apparently like his stand up is like evil. Like he's like really like nasty, like on stage, like gross. That's what everyone said, but I can't find any like clips or anything. I imagine it's probably never got to the internet because he doesn't want to want that out there. But I'd be very curious to see what that's like.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the whole thing that's like with Bob Saget, which I find hilarious. Like, you know, his stand up is so raunchy and stuff, but like he plays his like clean cut, wholesome dad all the time on TV and stuff. So, I think he said something like that he's got like basic cable Tourette's now from being on TV, you know, TV now so long and stuff like so. But he, he's got some really dirty jokes and stuff that he, I remember seeing him in blanking on the name of the DVD. It was like a documentary about a joke.
The Aristocrats.
Yeah, Aristocrats, yeah. And he does like probably one of the worst, filthiest versions of the joke.
Yeah, I remember seeing him in like the Dumb and Dumber sequel when I was a kid and being like, that's the guy from Full House?
Yeah. But no, I think it's just kind of that juxtaposition of being in family friendly stuff and then their dirty kind of filth. Yeah, right. So, I don't know anything about Mr. Lawrence. I'll have to see if I can find something.
Yeah,
do some digging. I don't know, man. That's like there's quite a few of those people though. Like I know Billy West. I know he did quite a bit of stand up and stuff too. And like,
Tom Kenny, SpongeBob himself. He was on Mr. Show.
Yeah, a lot of them, worked in comedy and stuff before finding work as a voiceover and stuff. So,
yeah.
That'd be let's make that happen. Let's get Stryker on some cartoons.
Yeah, there we go. That'd be sick.
Yeah. All right. What do you do any celebrity voices, celebrity impressions at all?
No, not really. No. I don't think.
Yeah.
Or maybe I can't. I don't even know.
Yeah.
I can do voices generally. Like I do voices when I'm talking to people. I can't really do them on command.
Right.
But no, there's no one in particular.
I feel like I'm good at like just kind of mimicking. Like if I would have just like heard a quote or whatever or something like that, a section of audio or a song or whatever. I feel like I'm pretty good at mimicking that voice, but like as far as like staying in that character to like
that's hard. Yeah.
Doing an impression and stuff is like I'm not good at that though. Mm-hmm. But yeah, man.
Oh no, wait! I do the Godfather voice all the time. It's really irritating. Like one time it was my birthday at my work, and I was like, "Hey, for my birthday, everyone has to talk like the Godfather," and they're like, "No, we're not doing that."
So, you want to do it?
You come to me. I'm telling my daughter's wedding to ask me for a favor. And you don't even come around for a cup of coffee.
Something like that. I don't know. It's hard to do because you have to like,
you have to hold your mouth like this and it's so quiet. You have to get the lisp just right, Marlon Brando's lisp.
Like that's my Godfather.
Every time I said... I can't think of now what spoof it was, but they did like it was one of those like Hot Shots or Naked Gun or something, whatever, one of those where they did like where they mimicked it and they made a parody and he's like, sorry, I've got these cotton balls in my mouth, I just came from the dentist and stuff. He's like, so
nice.
I think it was like Dom DeLuise's playing the character and stuff and like doing that voice. And so that's why I think of all the time, because like it just sounds like you have, some cotton in your cheeks or something. That was great, man.
I have no idea what it sounds like. I've never heard it. Yeah. So it could just sound completely inaccurate.
Right. We didn't really talk about it on this one, but at the time when you were busy doing quite a bit of stand up and stuff, is that something you? Still working at all, or you won't get?
No, I quit before the pandemic.
Even. Yeah,
I quit in like December of 2019. Was my last show.
Right. Well, why did you hang it up?
I just kind of lost interest.
Yeah.
Like over the years, just gradually. I think I peaked in like 2015 as far as like how much I was going out.
Right.
Like because I kept a little list of like what, how many I would do or whatever. And just gradually over the years, I went out less, and towards the end, I started writing less, and I just kind of didn't really care about it anymore. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, why bother now? And then it was the right choice, because then everything shut down for a long time. So I got out right at the exact moment.
Do you ever think you'll get back at it, or you think it's just you're done with it?
I consider it. Because I don't want to shut any door forever. Because that's stupid. Because there was a point 5 years ago where I was like, oh, I'll never quit, but then I did. So then it would be stupid to say I'll never go back, right?
Right.
I could do it as I consider it maybe as just but for fun, not as like the main career anymore.
Yeah.
Like I have no interest in headlining ever or anything like that.
Yeah, I get it though. Like I mean, as we all evolve and everything, things change and So just, I think it's be fresh to take a break from it and maybe, then see some other day, maybe like, hey, I'm itching to get back out there and try it again.
Yeah, just leave the door open.
Yep. But yeah, it's cool that it's not like you're not working. Obviously, you're saying we've been working on this film and everything else. So just taking your writing to a different media. Mm-hmm. So
for sure.
But yeah, that's, I don't know, man. I get hit up all the time, like, well, not as much anymore, but when I used to go to a ton of comedy shows, and there was always like people were like, hey, you want to get up here? And I'm like, no, I don't have any interest in doing it. Like I think it might be helpful for me to like do like an improv class of some sort.
Yeah.
Just to help be quicker and riff with guests better and stuff. Just like kind of help build that muscle.
Yeah. Skill. Yeah.
But, I think that might be interesting, but I don't really have any desire to get on a stage and tell jokes or anything. So,
well, good.
But yeah,
well, you know what I mean. Like, right. I'm glad you know that.
Yeah, I mean, I love the form, but I just I've never been one of those types that I was like, yeah, I should do that, or something. I just never nothing in me is. I feel like I can tell some funny stories at times, but like I don't know that I would need to get in on a stage and grab a mic and tell them. So
yeah, I feel like I just got it all out of my system. I felt like I ran out of things that I wanted to talk about in that way, so I just shifted back to movies.
Yeah, but yeah, you were kind of this like child prodigy, man. You kind of came out pretty young and doing some quite a bit of work early on, but you felt. You said you peaked in 2015 with that?
Yeah. It's like that was the 2015 was the most manic year of my life so far. I was, I was 18. I was crazy. I was deranged. Everyone is deranged until they're like 22 or 23 years old. So I'm just now coming out of it.
Yeah.
Thankfully.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you'll be able to channel it into some good movies and making some things happen here and with that. And but yeah, I'm excited to, for you, man. I'm excited to see where this thing goes because it just getting started with the...
Yeah, me too. So. It's so crazy because I feel like, the movie's more or less been finished for over a year and it's just been sitting on my laptop and going out to film festivals who say no for whatever reason, which I have two different theories about. I feel like some of them, I feel like the big, big festivals, it's like they're not going to take something made for no money from St. Louis because a lot of the times you need like a sales agent to get into a big festival, things like that. So that's just snobbery. And then I feel like there are a lot of like really tiny festivals I submitted to, just like, middle of nowhere, Nevada or whatever, where just based on everything I've seen, it seems like the viewing committees are just like old people who don't know what's going on. And they'll watch 5 minutes of your movie and then turn it off. I think that those are my two main theories. And sometimes maybe people just don't like it. And that's fine. I don't care. It's kind of designed to, it doesn't matter if you like it or not. But I think those have been the main two problems with festivals for me. So we've been just sitting on that for a year. And so I'm like, well, like the movie is real to me, but to the broader public who haven't seen it until, this past Saturday, it's only just now real.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just now going to take on a life of its own. Even though I'm like, oh, I'm about done with it. It's not done.
Right.
You know what I mean? Or hopefully. Hopefully it's not done.
Yeah.
Hopefully people, respond to it or it goes somewhere else.
Sure. I mean, I feel like that's with any project, what, you know, whether it's movies or music and stuff, you've done all the work before.
Mm-hmm.
And then now it's finally available.
Yeah.
Now it's
old news to you.
Right. Yeah. I'm sick of this thing, but now everybody else wants to talk about it. Everybody wants to see it and everything. Right.
And luckily I still enjoy talking about
it. Yeah. Right. But that's kind of the thing is like, you've spent so much time with this project already. And it's like, you're wanting to move on to working on other things, but now it's the time to mm-hmm. promote the current project. But
yeah. And I do like talking about it. So if anyone comes to June 10th.
Yeah.
And you are too afraid to say something during the Q&A, please do not be afraid to approach me afterwards by the merch table.
Yeah.
And we can have a chat there.
Yeah, man. Well, yeah. Grab tickets. Come on out.
Get them in advance because the last one sold out. And yeah. We just want to have a good head count. Mm-hmm. So there's like enough chairs and all that, you know.
Yeah. And you said there is going to be all kinds of... concessions and stuff, and popcorn and things. So yeah. Come on out, and then you can after party in the Heavy Anchor and have some adult beverages.
I'll talk to you. Yeah, we'll hang out.
Yeah, but yeah, Stryker, I really appreciate you doing this, man. It's been a fun hanging.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
It's cool catching up with you.
Yeah, it's great.
Like I said, I'm excited to see what's next for you, buddy. So
thank you, man.
Hopefully you'll come back and tell us about the next movie.
For sure, appreciate it.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Rock paper podcast.
Rock paper podcast.
Rock paper podcast.
Well, yeah, that was it.